It's Brad Shepherd here from Create PT Wealth. The program you're about to hear is a live recording from our two-day Create PT Wealth workshop. Together with Jason Urbanowicz, also from Create PT Wealth, we delivered some mind-blowing information to a jam-packed room of personal trainers. To make the best use of this program, make sure that you hit the pause button for all of the written exercises. Some words or phrases that we use may offend certain people. They might make you feel a bit uncomfortable. So please, break through any personal limitations that you may have and use this program as a tool to give you more success than you could have ever imagined. If you would like to receive more information about our programs, simply visit www.createptwealth.com. That's www.createptwealth.com. In terms of your mindset, we spoke a little bit about that. I spoke to you about how I've evolved and how I operated. But the very powerful thing was when I started to connect with Jace. Now, as I mentioned, we knew each other since we were 15. Our paths crossed occasionally every now and then. All I knew was one name, you know, Urban X Skinnergowich or whatever it was called. Eventually, in our 20s, we got together. And I remember we had a few workouts occasionally, but we sort of crossed paths. But it wasn't until our mid to late 20s that we really started to connect in terms of working from our business. And I can say that what he delivers in his business is called Beyond Success, and I guarantee that that's what it will deliver to you. And when I got together with him and I learnt from him and all the strategies and techniques, it's powerful, powerful stuff. So with that, I'd like to introduce Jason to come out the front.
Yeah, we're good mates. Really good mates. I'll just turn this down a bit. So how are you going so far? Good, yeah? In this session, I want to actually cover a little bit about how the mind works. And some of you may have seen me do this session, but there's a lot of you in the room who haven't. And primarily the reason why I do that is because in that session that Brad did, there was a lot of things come up about, you know, what if they want to leave me? What if the clients don't stick around? And so does it make sense to say that they come from you? They do come from somewhere within you, your fears, your concerns. And if I give you a little bit of rundown about what I actually do, I'll paint the picture for you like this. Have you ever been on a holiday, but it's a new destination, so you've never been there before, and so you're at your starting point and you're traveling along, and you get to like a T-intersection, and you're sitting there and you're wondering, do I turn left or right, because you don't know where you are. Anybody had that familiar type experience? Yep. And what's the next thing you primarily do if you don't know which way to turn? Well, you probably pull out the Refidex if you have one, wouldn't you? So you pull out that to say, someone wouldn't, no, you just go whatever way. You're not helping. Painting a picture for you. If you're a male, ask your wife. Oh, we won't get into that. Because mine's in the back of the room. So you pull out the Refidex, or the street directory, and you'd actually find out which way you needed to go to get to the right direction. You with me? And that's basically what I do. What I do is help people to understand which way they need to turn to make sure they get to the destination that they want to end up in. And along the journey of our life, we can get lost quite easily, can't we? We can start off on a path and think, yeah, I know where I'm heading, and all of a sudden get lost and think, geez, how did I get there to start with, and how do I get myself back on? Now, have you ever wished there was a manual for the big computer that you've got stuck on your shoulders? Who would like to know if there was a manual out there that, you know, you're thinking, just me? Oh, cool. Viewers, good. I'm glad I'm not alone. And so wouldn't it be good to go, you know, when I do X, Y, Z, I really wanted to know why I do that. What, you know, people that want to lose weight, but they find themselves in the kitchen, automatically in the fridge, saying, I'm not going to eat that bit of chocolate cake, I'm just going to check that it's okay. They're wondering how that happened, because their feet just somehow magically walked themselves into the kitchen and opened up the fridge, and next thing they're eating the cake. And it's not until they finish eating the cake that they're thinking, you idiot, you're supposed to be on a diet. And so we want to look at what actually drives you to do the things that you don't necessarily want to do. Is that okay if we look at that? Because Brad mentioned, got you to write down a few of the things that may be stopping you from getting to where you need to be. And you actually need to know a little bit about this stuff and in terms of how it drives you. Now, I primarily do this for a living now. We run big 3-day workshops. Who's actually attended one of our mental toolboxes? Yeah, so what do you reckon, Tom? Yeah, Carla, you went to the mental toolbox. What did you think? Did you find it helped in your business? Yep. Cool. So let's get started on that. If I could snap my fingers and I could grant you all one wish, off the top of your head, what type of things would you like to wish for? Keeping in mind you're not allowed to wish for a never-ending packet of Tim Tams. What are some of the things you'd like to see happen in your life? Passive income. Yep, I'm glad someone mentioned it. So can we just summarize that to wealth? So if we make it as wealth, because we'll get a lot of that kind of stuff. What are some other things? So health. Yep. Now this is probably not a question I'd normally ask with a bunch of personal trainers, but actually who themselves would like a bit more energy and be a bit healthier? Yeah, so there's quite a few of us. We're in the field, but we work so hard that even it affects us as well. What else? If we've got 10 seconds left to go? So working less. So travel. So we've got... Yep, success. Happiness, yep. Is that for you or for everybody? Yeah, because they're kind of related. So happiness. So stress relief, yeah. So I'll just put that into health. What about relationships? Anybody got a relationship they'd like to see go well or better? Maybe just get one. Maybe now's the time to place an ad. You might want to stand up and take the 10 seconds. So we can put relationships, because really in business, it's a lot about relationships, isn't it? So I was speaking to somebody on the break, David, and we were just discussing that... a lot of your success will come down to, exactly how you do communicate with us and how you can build relationships. Really, it's just a wish list, isn't it, guys? Like, we could just keep filling that board up, couldn't we? We could just keep going. So if we said that was a wish list, then away we go. The real question is, how does some of this stuff turn up in your life? So how does this stuff turn up in your life is probably really what you're asking. And as I see it, there's only two possibilities of this stuff turning up in your life. And one is the element of luck. And so you can be lucky enough to be born healthy and get through your life with nothing major happen to, or you could be unlucky enough to be born with a disease or serious illness that affects you in some way. So do you understand the element of luck? You can be lucky enough to have a stork drop a whole heap of money at your front door, maybe with the perfect person delivering it. And if that happens to you, please let me know. We'll make a fortune. So if luck doesn't drop some of this stuff smack bang in your lap, what's the only other real possibility of this stuff turning up in your life? Yep, so you make it happen? You have to make it? So primarily, what part of you needs to make it? Your mindset, yep. So if I drew that circle and said that circle represented your mind, and I said in that circle there was 200 billion brain cells, would that sound like a lot? It ought to. Unless you've had a big night at the Normby and might be down a few. And I said that each one of those brain cells represented $1, and you spent one of those dollars for every second of every hour, you'd end up with $3,600. And if you did that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, any ideas on how long it'd take you to spend all that? And to be fair, without a calculator, you're only going to be guessing. 12 months? Yep. The correct answer is like 6,900 and something years. Now, do any of you feel like your brain's not quite operating at that level? Your brain will actually operate on three different levels. Actually, anybody had a day when you wouldn't have given 50 cents for your brain? Yeah. The only good thing about that is when you're having a good day, it's doubled. You're up to a dollar. So it'll operate on three different levels. And some of you will be familiar with them as soon as I put a name to them. So we refer to the top region as your conscious. And the conscious operates in terms of words. So are you familiar that you talk to yourself? Yep, that's quite normal. Getting answers, that's not. But talking to yourself's quite normal. And so it'll operate in terms of words, and it'll use around 10% of your total brain capacity. Now, don't let anybody tell you that 10% is not a lot, because if I was to give you 10% of $200 billion, would that be okay? Yeah, thanks very much. I'd be okay with that. So huge horsepower, and primarily it operates in your mother tongue. So if you're German, you hear German, it's French, French, and away we go. Down here, this region, we refer to that as your subconscious. And it's in your subconscious region, you'll find things such as sleep. So are you aware that when you go to sleep that your mind's still active? Because you're thinking about the day's event, or you're dreaming, or you wake up and you think, oh, how did I get here? That's alcohol, isn't it? And who's that person next to me? And so also, that only happened to me once. Also in here is creativity. And by creativity, I'm not referring to your artistic ability. I'm talking about your ability to solve problems. So to be able to walk into a room like this and have to set all the chairs upright so everyone can fit in. Does it make sense? So your creativity side of you. So also in here is intuition. And if I spell something wrong, what I used to say at most gigs is go easy. I'm just a personal trainer by trade. So a bit hard to say it here because we're all trainers. So intuition. You can laugh at my shit jokes as well. So intuition, the best possible example I can give is just thinking about somebody that you know and you haven't seen them for quite a number of, maybe years or months, and all of a sudden you bump into them and you get that speak of the devil type experience. Anybody had that? Yep. And someone calls you and you just you say to yourself, I was just thinking about you. Actually, I was just thinking about that person. And then the next thing they've called. If you don't want to run into somebody that you're thinking about, that's a bummer. But another example is driving your car down the freeway and getting just a bit of an idea, essentially, to take your foot off the accelerator. And what you find is people down the road, the police down the road booking people. Anybody had that? Yeah, anybody hadn't had that? I've got two sitting in my fridge right now, nice photographs of me and my car, and Narelle reckons they're the best. No, anyway. So that's intuition. And the best one is just getting a sense that the person you're talking to is telling you the truth. Anybody had that? You just got we call it gut feeling. You just somehow know that that person's being honest with you. And you may have heard the same thing from somebody else previously and just think that doesn't fit with me. And so we call that our gut feeling or sixth sense, so intuition. Also in here is our memory. Now, I hope I don't have to explain memory to you, but who's had a memory blank? And what is it you reckon we forget? Probably the most common, most often. Probably people's names. Yeah, and we're not that overly concerned by it. So have you ever been out to a restaurant or a party and you've been introduced to somebody and 30 seconds later you have no idea who you're talking to? Yeah. And we're not rushing out to do courses and how to remember people's names at parties. We just all go, yeah, isn't it terrible? Yeah, I forget people's names too. And, oh, it's shocking. Very rarely will you come across a scenario where you'll say to somebody, hey, look, sorry, I've forgotten your name. And they say to you, listen here, you halfwit. It's been less than a minute since I've told you. I'm not telling you again. You can go without. They'll just tell you. And so away we go. Really what does bother us is that we forget the things that we know we shouldn't. So hands up those who've got children that you admit to, yep. So how many? Two? Any more than two? Yep, how many? Four? Keep two hands up. Five. Okay, winner. No. So if you don't have kids at this present time, but you've got brothers and sisters, you'll be able to relate to it in some form. So have you ever called one of your kids by the other one's name? Yep. Gone through the whole lot? Yeah, I had a lady once said, yeah, I called him by the dog's name. I thought, that's love. You'd feel special, wouldn't you? So when you're sitting there going, Peter, Jeffrey, what is your name, kid? That's final proof for them that you've lost it. They've suspected it for a while, but now the evidence is in. Mum and Dad have lost it. They can't remember my name. Because they're sitting there thinking, if there's anybody who should remember my name, it's a person who gave it to me. And you can't even remember. So, yeah, away we go. Have you gone to get something from a different room in your house, arrived there and sitting there standing and saying to yourself, what did I come here for? Doesn't fill you full of confidence, does it? And away we go. So that's memory blank. But on the other side of memory is photographic memory. So who's had a bit of photographic memory pop into their head? Yep. And primarily that can be triggered by music. So, you know, you can be driving your car down the street, hear a song and bang, you're back at, you know, like 10 years ago at a party or something that you're at. And you can get the smells, the taste, you can get the whole lot. And if it was an embarrassing situation for you, you can be driving your car down the road 10 years later going red. So you can actually relive it. And so that's memory blank. So that's a quick overview of the subconscious region and what happens in that area. Yes.
Yep. Yeah, so you know what happens is we've got a filing system, and they call it the reticular activator system. And through the course of your life, you'll have experiences that get stored like a filing cabinet. And so you'll have another experience. And what happens is it may not even be the same thing, but it seems familiar. And so the information that gets sent to your filing system, if you want to call it, takes it down as an experience that you've had already. And I'll explain a little bit more about that later on. So absolutely. Does that make sense? Yeah. Oh, yeah, cool.
that's better. So now I've lost what I was up to. What was I talking about? Subconscious. Thank you. Memory. just teach the stuff. So that's the subconscious. Down here we have the unconscious region. And if we were saying that you're operating in that level, and that level only, you'd be in a coma. So we don't know a lot about that region other than to say it just controls autobiotic function. So, you know, your heart still goes and you're still breathing. You may know some people that only operate in the coma region. In a coma, that's all right. They're doing the best they can, hey. And so the real thing to look at now is that having some information about these two areas can provide huge breakthroughs in terms of what we get out of our life. So let's look at how this whole thing works. It's true to say that your brain runs on electricity. Okay, so it's a collective of nerves, and electricity is the primal factor that runs through that. And you can actually speed your brain up or slow it down if you know where to look on this scale. So what do you need to do to go to sleep? What's a generic term that you'd use to say, how do you go to sleep? Got to relax. And so if we went around the room, we'd get a whole heap of different versions of how you do that. So some of you would say, you know, I read a book to go to sleep. Others would say, no, that'll actually wake me up. Some would say, watch TV. Go for a walk, scotch and coke. Doesn't really matter. It's just your own method. So if we know how that's how you go to sleep, how do you wake yourself up on time the next day? Coffee. Before actually wakes. So alarm clock. And what's the job of the alarm clock? Yep. Makes you shit yourself, doesn't it, when it goes off, like me this morning. So the job is to stop you from relaxing. So if you see where we've been down here in the relaxed state, down to the subconscious, and now the alarm's gone off and we're bang straight back up in the conscious state, really high up there. Who can wake themselves up on time just by going, I've got to be up at 6 in the morning? Yeah, so pretty much half the room. So pretty staggering concept is that, 200 billion brain cells, and somewhere in that region there's an alarm clock. The scientists can't find it, they're looking for it, but the average Australian, at least half of the average Australian, can say, I know how to wake myself on time. Quite staggering, and it seems like a bit of what kind of statement, but you think about it, just by instructing your mind or brain to behave in a certain way, it will start to do so. It'll take those instructions that you've given it and go, right, I've got to be up at 5 o'clock and I'll get up at 5 o'clock. I can wake myself up on time, and I work in Sydney and Melbourne a fair bit where they have daylight saving, and so I've got 2 6 o'clocks. I've got a 6 o'clock here and a 6 o'clock when I travel down to Melbourne, so I can adjust it. Quite amazing, you know, it knows the difference, and that's by simple instruction. So if we look at if we look at the scenario of how this whole thing works, because really you're only going to be in one region at a time at this point. So yeah, they're like mutually exclusive to one another. So if you're operating at a subconscious level, you'll have difficulty accessing this level, and vice versa. It's like a light switch. You know which one you're in if you could flick a switch, because they rather work or they don't in terms of this region. So if you're going to be asleep, you're either asleep or you're not, aren't you? Yeah. Ever found yourself lying in bed saying, I should have been asleep 3 hours ago? Because it rather works or it doesn't. And, how do you try to remember something? If you've lost your car keys, what's the method that we normally use to find them? Yeah, retrace your steps. And that's what this brain does well. The sequential, logical, retrace it. So a bit of an overview about the two brains. when we think about the average adult getting around, we spend a lot of our time in this region, and primarily because we've got a lot of things going on. So, you know, we've got bills to pay, jobs to go to, you know, a lot of activity going on in our life. So we spend, as adults, 95% of your time up here in this region. And so have a think about it. When was your very first thought for the day? Pretty early, wasn't it? Yeah, and when will your last thought be? Can be pretty late, can't it? Who can just keep a thought going even while you're drifting off the bed? Who stayed up all night thinking about something? Yeah. Although I had a guy in a workshop say to me once, my last thought of the day comes after lunchtime. And I said, mate, you've got to teach me how you do that. So adults spend a lot of time in this region. Kids spend a lot of time in this region, and they're great at remembering things, aren't they? They're like little sponges. They've got great intuition, creativity, and going off to sleep, although that can be debatable, I guess. And so if I give you an example about how this whole thing works, I'd illustrate that by saying, say we were to take all of you to a different state or country that you'd never been to before, and we dropped you off at one location, and we gave you a map, and we said, using the map, you need to find yourself into this location. And you're able to do that, and you found yourself in the correct location, and you're walking up and down the street talking to yourself about, why don't they put bloody numbers on the building so I can tell if I'm going up or down? Is that a familiar experience? Yep. As you're doing that, you look up and you see a face that looks familiar, but a name that's just left you. Yeah. Have you noticed the conversation that goes on in your head when that takes place? What's his name? Yeah. And have you noticed that as you get closer to them, the conversation accelerates? So what's their name and your buddy better tell me quick. And you get that come on type experience. And, you know, before they see you, you think, could I just make a break for it? And so before they look up, you think, maybe if I just cross the road now, they won't see me, I'll get out of it. Maybe if I just duck down behind this car, they won't see me, I'll be right. But before you can do that, they've looked up and they've seen you, and from about 300 metres away, they've screamed your name out. It's obvious they know everything about you. You can't even remember where you met them from. So under the threat of being embarrassed at that point of time, where are you going to go on this scale? So you're actually going to go further up on the scale. So what have we moved further away from? Memory. So you're less likely to get their name now because the tension has gone up, and bang. And so away we go. And so I don't know what women do, but men call each other mate, don't they? So if you're talking to somebody and they're calling you mate, they've got no idea who they're talking to. If you're married to them, that's a bit of an issue. So anyway, you have your conversation and you go your separate ways. What happens, you think, anywhere from half an hour to 3 hours later? Yep, and why is that? Yeah, that's right. So we've gone up to here, and then the pressure's off, and so we come back down. And I call it the hook because we get caught on it. Looks like a hook, I think. But we get caught on this thing. And so the memory banks come back up online, but it won't just say, hey, his name was John or Mary. It'll wait till you get triggered. So you'll be walking past, say, Bob's Mechanics, and you'll go, Bob, that was his name. So it'll wait till you get triggered. It's a bit like if it was a bank, you'd know you've got access to the money because the vault doors would be open. You could see it. Doesn't work that way with your subconscious. If we were to change subjects now and look at this whole scenario and how it affects us in business and our life in general, we would take a few other examples and say, have you ever known anybody who studied up for an exam, say at home, and they could get 80% of the questions right? Get them in the test environment and they've actually just gone, yep, constantly, yep. Does that look like the same thing? Same kind of pressures on. When at home, it was fine. Yep. So it's become real more important for you, because at home, it wasn't important. The test wasn't on. Get yourself in the exam and it's increased. Yep. Not really. No, but I understand what you're saying, but I don't have an answer for it. because that'll be a personal thing, more than likely, yeah. And so anyway, so if we take another example, then we say, well, think about a job interview. If you've ever been to a job interview and known somebody who's gone for one, and they've gotten the job interview and they knew what they wanted to say before going in, but then they got there and they just went blank. Had that? or you know somebody who's had that, maybe personally. Afterwards, they're driving home going, you know what, I know what I needed to say and I didn't say it. I left out all the good bits that sell me. It can be very similar if you've got a client and you've got to put across exactly the benefits and the service and why you're better than the guy down the road. And if you're in that situation and environment and you're feeling the pressure, then you may leave what you actually need to say and how you need to sell your product and I guess do a second-rate job. And that's not really what we're after. And we're going to teach you how to not do that later on. Does that make sense? Yeah, the pressure can be on because it's an important client. You put your price up and it's quite easy to back away from it, isn't it? I remember the first time I was told to put my prices up to $200 to my client by my coach, and he was actually with me at the time. So he was actually in the interview that I was doing it. And we got to the end of the process, and the guy said, right, okay, how much is it? I'm shitting myself. And I said, $200? And my voice broke, and I went, $200? And so just getting out of that hurdle was a great thing to do. You know, it didn't sound that great coming out, but I was able to stick the deal. And from there on in, I did feel more confident about doing it. So that's a little bit why I say I honestly didn't believe internally that I could pull that off, but I had a go at it, and it came off, and then that reinforced that, hey, well, I should not think for other people. I should let them decide what they think they want to pay. See, we get caught up in, would I pay that, is really the question. When instead of, like, you need to let, it's none of your business really what people will want to pay. That's up for them to decide. And if they decide they don't want to pay that amount, well, that's fair enough. Maybe you can point them in the direction of someone in their price racket. Does that make sense? So, yeah, one thing to write down, and I encourage you to write down, is that it's none of your business what people are willing to think to start with and what they're willing to pay. Because what I'm willing to pay to use Brad as a trainer may be different than Tom. Tom might not see the value in it, but Brad may have demonstrated enough to me that the value's there. Which bit? So it's actually none of your business what people want to pay. I think Brad said it beautifully, you know. Some people drive Ferraris, some people buy Dados. You may not see the value in a Ferrari. Other people may. Okay. Think about the last argument you're in. Did you become more and more relaxed or more and more tense? And you can take your time with that one. Can't hear. Tense, yeah. And ever notice that your best line in the argument came about 3 hours after you had it? It's almost worth ringing them up and starting again. You go, I know what I should have said to the mongrel. But I'll give you a bit of benefit from my experience. If that does happen, just leave it. Because if they're even 2 minutes ahead of you on this scale and they've dropped back into this region, they've probably thought about 30 things I wanted to say to you, and you'll have your big one. So just drop it. Leave it for the next time. So that's the subconscious region. That's how it operates. The next thing to look at is we change subjects and we say, look, how does this affect us physically? Because I worked with a girl once who got so nervous on this scale before going into an exam that she was physically ill. So she used to vomit. And so that's quite extreme tension levels. And you'll see that in sport as well. So it can affect, our thinking can affect how we act physically as well. And if we go to sport and say, well, if I was to come out the front here and drill a hole in the ground and give you a putter and 1,000 golf balls, and I say from here to here, that's the distance that you've got to be able to make the putt, do you reckon you could get them in? If that's too far, I'll make it closer. So we're talking that far. So you could get them in, huh? Yeah, just go like that if you agree. Yep, cool, now you're alive. And we leave it to your own devices and we say, you go and do that, we'll come back later on. We come back later on and we say, how you going? And you go, good. And we say, you're getting them all in? And you go, yeah, getting them all in. And we say, look, on this last ball that you got left, if you get this ball in, we'll give you $5.5 million. Now, would that affect any of you? Yeah, some of us would bend the club, wouldn't we? The tension would be so high. And so just because something becomes important to you all of a sudden, it can affect your performance. The putt's everything in golf, isn't it? Yeah. You look at the two top tennis players going to a Grand Slam, and they're playing for an event that's probably been a lifelong goal of theirs. They've probably been training since the age of 12.
to get there, and they've made it, they're there. And what fascinates me is that you often hear them being interviewed the night before, and the interviewer will say, look, what's your game plan for going into this big event? And quite often enough, you'll hear him say, I'm just going to try to go out and enjoy my tennis. Now, for $5.5 million, whatever it is, try to go out and enjoy your tennis. You know, but it's really more about that it's been a lifelong objective for these people, and that they've trained so hard for it that when they get into that moment on the day, what they actually trained into their body won't come out. And we can refer to it as choking. And so you can be practicing something, but if you don't get this part of your mindset under control where you can actually just learn to relax in 30 seconds or less, then it can affect your performance and the results you actually get in life. And like anything, like training your fitness levels, it's something that needs to be trained. And so, you know, your clients don't turn up to you and do 3 weeks of training and you go, beauty, I'm right now. I don't have to train the rest of my life. It's a lifelong thing. So this is another element that we need to get trained up so it becomes automatic for you. Peter Brock was famous for saying that the way to make car go faster is to get out of it. And so when he was training and when he was doing laps around the oval and he couldn't get a faster time, he said it was time to stop, de-stress, get out of the car and go up the paddock and immediately go, immediately get back in the car and go quicker. And it's quite a good metaphor for life. You know, what we do is when things aren't working out, we try to get harder and harder sometimes, don't we? Yeah, I sure have. And getting the same result when what we could actually do is just stop, take a time to reassess, take a time out and get back in the car and go immediately faster. So really what I'm talking about boils down to one simple principle. If you can learn to be relaxed when there's every reason not to be, you're going to get the most out of yourself. Okay? And that's in all facets of your life. You know, Ian Thorpe is definitely famous. He was famous for being a great swimmer. But one thing he was famous for is that slow body motion out of the water. So it looked like he was going quite slow. But in the water, he had the quick pull. And I remember hearing him being interviewed one time and they said, mate, that looked like a pretty close race. And he said, yeah, the pressure was really on, but I was able to hold my stroke. Now, what does he mean by he was able to keep his stroke? Yeah, so he was able to remain relaxed enough to do what he had trained in his body to get the win. But what was the temptation? Because you got the guy coming up the side here to thrash around and start trying to go faster, lose his rhythm, lose what he had trained in himself and probably ultimately win, lose the race, which is the difference between coming first and second, is the mindset. So, you know, paramedics learn how to do this stuff by accident. So if you look at paramedics, they've actually been trained enough in this stuff and they do it enough that they can be relaxed when there's every reason not to be. So you think about turning up to a roadside accident. If you were that person, would you want a paramedic to start screaming, going, oh, I don't know about this one. You cover it, Gary. You'd probably want them to be able to look after you and operate sequentially enough to save your life, quite possibly. They may actually be physically sick afterwards because I've done a bit of work with them, but they can get themselves in a relaxed enough state so they can do what they need to do. You think about pilots, they put pilots in big simulators before they actually put them in the real thing and they make the wings fall off and the engines fail because they actually want to see how they go under pressure. Because same thing again, you want to be flying a plane and see the pilot running down the back screaming, we're all going to die, and don't you have the co-pilot saying, mate, that was just your iPod that was flashing? So learning how to be relaxed when there's every reason not to be will open up a whole heap of range of possibilities for you. And it then opens up a whole new area. And that's why I left this area blank. So also in this region here, you'll find things such as programs. Now, you may be familiar by the term beliefs, but we're going to use both. So programs operate in this subconscious region. And when Brad was talking about some of the things that are holding you back, then this is a good indication of some of the programs that you have. And there'll be 60,000 of these things running around in this area. And most of those programs have been developed from a very young age. So you'll pick them up from influential people in your life, so such as your parents and teachers and stuff like that. And a program or a belief is something that runs you automatically to give you a result. So let's have a look at some programs. Walking, for an example. We've pretty much got it down pat these days, haven't we? Do you actually have to sit there and go left, right, left, right, left, right? Now, if you do see someone walking down the street saying left, right, don't interrupt them. They're busy. So that's a program. We don't have to think about it. Let's think about brushing your teeth. Not important how you brush your teeth. It's just important probably that you do. And so If you notice, you've got your own little wire brush in your teeth, so you might do the little racetrack thing. And if you miss a couple of teeth, you actually just don't do those two teeth. You go around the whole track again. And so that's just the way you do things. Think about your first driving lesson. Now, who can actually remember their first driving lesson? Yeah, what was it like? Did you have to think about it? Yeah. What was it like, Tom? Did you have to think about push the clutch in, change gears? Don't change lanes till you actually mean it? Yeah, imagine if on the first driving lesson, the driving instructor turned up, you're driving along in peak hour traffic, and he said, it's lunchtime, and by the way, here's yours, and handed you the lunch. The car would be all the road, the lunch would be all over you. But what can you do now while driving a car? So what are some of the examples? Talk on the phone, text, bowl of cereal. That's a new one. Haven't heard that. That's great. It's a bowl of cereal. Read a paper. Yep. The lipstick scares me a bit. The makeup. So we can do all kinds of crazy things. And you can be in there doing all that, talking to the passion. You have the stereo pumping, and you can scream at all the other idiots out there trying to kill you while finding a car park. So quite talented we are now, and we don't actually have to think about that. Whose car knows the way home, by the way? Isn't that a cool trick? You just get home, you go, oh, yeah. And we say the car knows the way home, but you've done that routine so many times that it's just automatic, and you rock up. And you go, oh, I don't remember that. My business partner, Paul Blackburn, who taught me this stuff, he was saying to me one time when he was living in Sydney, he lived in the same house for 20-plus years, and he said, you know, I've arrived home from a big day at work. It was a massive week. I was really tired. And I've pulled into the driveway, and he said, I've been confronted with two people walking out the back of my house. And I said, geez, mate, what did you do? And he said, well, I was sitting there going, do I ring the coppers, or am I brave enough to get out and confront these people? And I said, what did you do? And he said, well, I'm glad I didn't either, because he said, I actually sold the house to him about 3 weeks ago. So the program had gone off. He just automatically drove home to the place he had for 20-odd years, and there he was. And I said, well, was it embarrassing? He said, oh, embarrassing, all right. He said, you ever know when you do something that's embarrassing and you top it by doing something that's even more embarrassing than the original thing? And I said, yeah, what'd you do? And he said, I wound down my window because they saw me. And he said, did I leave my hose here? I said, nice one, mate. Feeling confident that you're teaching me this stuff. So that's a program. Have we got any fingernail biters in the room, or anybody who bites nails? Yeah, I've just got to check this out because I'm an occasional biter. Can I have a look at yours, Melissa? That's not bad. That's just sport, really, isn't it? Yeah, who's serious? Who draws blood? Yeah, they're not bad either. Yep. So, fingernail biters. Do you actually have to think about biting your fingernails, or do your fingers just end up in your mouth? Yeah, they just end up in there, don't they? So pretty exciting for people to be around because your hands just go wherever they want. If you're sitting next to one, you might be up for a good time. But very rarely will you see a fingernail biter. Yeah, stop, Jace. Very rarely will you see a fingernail biter sitting here doing this, going, hey, look at that. If I want to see blood by Friday, I better get into them. No, they'll just do it. Now, I'm guessing that we don't have any smokers in the room, but I've got to ask anyway. Have we got anybody who smoked or used to smoke, maybe? Used to smoke. Yeah, how many did you smoke, Chris? Packet a day, so it's been a while since you haven't. Yeah. Did you start on a packet a day, or did you start off the unstolen one? Yeah. So over time it built up. Yeah. Have you ever stopped and then gone back before you've been? Yep. So you've done that. And did you find that you went straight back to what you finished on? So actually, was it more or less? A bit less. Yep. Did that slowly creep back up to what you were on? Stop off that. Well done. Congratulations. Anybody ever stopped and gone back again and then gone straight back to the amount they were smoking when they stopped? Yep. Yep, so that's a program. So, you know, what happens is with willpower. Willpower happens at this level. So willpower is I won't smoke anymore. But the fundamental change happens down at this region. And so we use willpower not to do something. But willpower, 10%, and I'll show you why we struggle with that, because down here in the subconscious region, we run the brain power at 50 to 60%. So you got 10 up against 50 to 60% of a program that's been deeply rooted in there for a long time, something like smoking. It's taken you a while to build up to a pack. So there's a bit of programming there, a bit of repetition locks in. You say, oh, I've had enough. That's no more for me, smoking. However, we've done no real deep change at a deeper level. A stressful event may happen, something may occur. Bang, the program goes off and you're back smoking what you used to do smoke. So, does it make sense? Yeah, cool. So, very important stuff to understand in terms of making long-lasting change. So, if you're in business and you actually want to take it to the new level, we need to uncover and discover what your actually programs and beliefs are about being a successful business person. Because before we do that, it's just going to be really talk. So, the reason why I wanted to find out some of the things you guys are interested in, because I want to have a look at them. So, let's look at... let's look at wealth. What do you reckon happens to most lottery winners? Yeah, I heard some crazy story the other day that someone in London had won like £20 million, but is now £2 million in debt. And so who in the room thinks that they'll go okay if they had $1 million? They'd be all right. Yeah, don't we all? But 85% of the New South Wales Lottery Board says otherwise. They say, and we've seen their statistics, because if you show that you're evaluating for psychological reasons, then they'll let you have a look at their statistics. They have a team of about 30 people, and their main job is to go to the people that win the lotto and say, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to you. And before we give you your check, we need to sit you down and listen to something. So what do you reckon they sit them down first and then give them the check? Wouldn't hear a word, wouldn't it? Yeah, mate, that's great. Yeah, okay. Because don't we all want to think we're in the 15% that would be okay? I certainly do. So yeah, so 3 years they're broke, back to square one. And normally with a lot of broken relationships to follow that up. Money does funny things to people, huh? And it's a great way to look at your programming in terms of money's not a real, it's not actually real, it's a man-made concept. Did you get that? That it's something that we agree that something's worth value on. So you can see how your programming is directly related to money, how you spend it. But actually, we won't go on that now. We'll talk a little bit about that later on. If we look at health, actually, do you want to know the test, how you're programming with money? Do you want to know the test? Who wants to know the test? Because you can fix it if you know. if you start the week with $100 in your wallet, and it's now Friday, and you've got 55 cents left, guess which way you're programmed? You're incredibly talented at spending money. And yeah, actually, and sorry, the part I left out is, and you don't know what happened to it. You don't know what happened to the rest of the $100. You're extremely talented at making money disappear. And so that's a quick test. If we look at health, we change subjects down and go to health. Do you know somebody who's pretty much always healthy? Who knows someone who's pretty much healthy most of the time? Yeah? So what if we went to a mother of, say, 3 children and said, how come you never get sick? What would her response be? Don't have time, so don't have time to get sick. What if we went to somebody who owns their own business and that business is actually, their financial success and the kids being looked after is reliant on them running that business, and we said, how come you don't get sick? Can't afford to. So here's an interesting thing. To get sick, apparently you've got to have time and money. So you probably don't want to get those two things. So is that the truth? Or are they explaining something to you? What are they explaining to you? A program or a belief that they've got. So it's not true that you, if you don't have time, you can't get sick. I know plenty of people that didn't have the time and they got sick, because eventually they will. And I know people that couldn't afford to get sick and they did get sick also. What happens to a few people, do you reckon, when they go on holidays? They get sick. Because if you've been telling yourself for quite some time that you don't have the time to get sick, and you actually all of a sudden now get the time, it's pretty obvious what's going to happen. It's like telling your brain you've got to be up at 5 o'clock in the morning. It's going to listen. So we need to be careful of our self-talk and what we tell ourselves. If we go to happiness. Now, do you know somebody who's happy pretty much all the time? Doesn't matter when you see them. You say, if I see Jenny tomorrow, I just know she's going to be in a good mood. Yeah? And doesn't that shit ya? And, we may say, not... I'm generalizing here, but we may say that they're just naturally happy. Or we can say that they've got a hold of a program and belief that says no matter what happens to them in life, they're going to just decide to be happy. And wherever they've got that from, doesn't really matter. But that's what they're running. And do you know somebody who's always miserable a lot of the time, and they've made the decision today to be miserable tomorrow? Do you know someone like that? Yeah, and you probably deal with that on a daily basis with some of your clients. You know, if we look at relationship, and we say we take Mary Smith, the victim of domestic violence, and we take her out of that environment as a means of saving her from that situation, but we don't give her any training in this field. We just say, look, behind that glass wall over there's 1,000 available men. Who do you think she's going to pick? Another violent person. And so we're not blaming anybody here, but what's going to happen is her radar, her program belief is going out there, and she's saying, oh, there is biggest mongrel in the room. And why is that? Well, does she actually want that, do you reckon? Is she looking for the biggest mongrel? No, what she's looking for, she goes, I want a good one. I actually want a decent bloke. But 60% of the program are saying there is. And so what you'll find yourself doing is, you find yourself over here talking to yourself about, I want to be over there. So you'll be here saying, I want to be successful. You'll be here saying, I want to make more money in my business. But you'll be over here and you'll be struggling still. And you'll be sitting there wondering why. And isn't that frustrating? So what I want to do, what I want to share with you is, I want to help you break through that. Is that okay if we do that? Because you don't have to. You can stay the same if you like. So does that make sense? Just a couple of quick questions on that one, if you have any. Nope. Okay. Let me get you to change seats real quick. Introduce yourself to somebody new. Okay, so we're going to learn the key ingredients to becoming successful. We're going to understand the psychology of developing a successful business. Why is that important? Well, you know, if you actually don't understand the business you're in, you don't know it at a deeper level, then it's going to be a bit of a vague experience for you. So we're going to look at that and cover that. We're going to establish where you are currently in business. And Brad, I touched on that a bit, so a bit of a different spill. Discover what is holding you back and uncover the actions you need to make. So I'm going to get into that. Why listen to me? Well, here's a few reasons. So that was me at 154 kilos. I was about 26 at the time. Was probably at a period of time where I was really struggling, and so I knew what I wanted to do, but I didn't know how to get there. Does that make sense? So I actually knew what I wanted to do, but I was struggling to know how I had to let go of some of these programs we're talking about. And I'm getting frustrated with, why do I keep making the same mistakes? So I went from 154 kilos to 98 in 6 months, and what I did was I used these methods that I'm going to be teaching over the weekend to do that. So while I had the physical element under wraps as well, I also learned how to tap in and accelerate my results by using the mindset. The reason I put it there, fail high school, is just to show that it really has little to do with your past. So what you've done up to this point has little to do with where you go from now. Does that make sense? So you can change any time you want. The one thing I've learned in this field is that humans learn very quickly. We just delay the process. And what I mean by that is, I had an uncle who used to smoke like a chimney, and all us kids used to give him a hard time and say, when are you going to stop smoking? And he said, when you can swim the length of a swimming pool. And it wasn't too far along that we were able to do that, and he said, I meant 2 laps. And then it went to 3 laps, and then he said, no, I meant you and your younger brother. And eventually we just gave up. We thought, oh, well, he's never going to do it, so we moved on. And it wasn't until I was about 18 years old that we were all driving to a park down the coast, I believe, and he said to my auntie, he said, pass the smokes. And she said, I've told you about smoking in the car, you're not doing. He said, no, just pass me the smokes. And I said, oh, she said, okay. And he just threw them out the window. And he'd never smoked again since. And so if you ask him now how you stop smoking, he goes, oh, it's easy, just do. But he was building up for about 20 years to get that now. So I'm going to suggest that you don't have to wait the 18 years or 20 years. You don't actually have to wait until you've been in the industry for 10 years like Brad to build up the reputation. There's other quicker ways to do it, and we've got to become resourceful about that. You know, how do we actually open our mind? How do we actually convince people and sell ourselves to the benefit that we can actually help them now, not 10 years down the track? And so that's what we want to look at. Found and married a soulmate. I mean, just personally for me, I could find relationships, I could get into relationship, but I could lose them just as quick. Can anybody relate to that? I hope so, because I don't want to be alone again up here. This is my self-image you're playing with. Just stick your hand up even if you don't. And so the thing I'm most proud about with all my achievements is that, because that was the one thing that I struggled with. I actually could get in relationships, but I could destroy them quickly as well. And so for me, that's the number one goal for me. That's the number one achievement that I've got in my life. from changing careers regularly to finding the problem. So you may be able to relate to this as well. I went through a period where I started my own car detailing business. From that, I went to the other next business, and I went to the next job, and I was really looking for the job to do it for me. Have you had that? Thinking if I just find the right job, they'll be happy. And that was to one day that I don't know why it occurred to me, but I just realized, I thought, I reckon I figured out the problem to why I'm not getting any further. And the rub was there. And I said, I think I've identified why I'm not where I need to be. And she said, well, what is it? I said, it's me. And she said, so if we just get rid of you, we'll be right then, eh? And I said, don't remember saying that bit. So I identified that the thing that held me back was me and my beliefs and my values and my opinions of where I needed to be. So the way I went from down the bottom here, 17,000 to 100,000 in 12 months, was I didn't actually really go out and make a big effort to become a master business person. What I did was just look at unraveling the beliefs that were holding me back. And you can ask Narelle on the break. I was quite surprised after that first 12 months, because I don't do any of the paperwork of the books. Narelle looks after that. And she told me how much we earned. I said, oh, really? That was great, because I had no idea, but I did. I knew something was different, and I knew that money was there, but I could not tell you the exact amount, but it felt right for me. Okay, from that to that. And so that was in 6 months. So I don't say any of this stuff to impress you, but just impress upon you that I've got some credibility, and as much as I've used the material that I'm teaching and I've put it in practice in my own life, and now I want to pass it on to you guys. So the line of success. So what you'll find in any industry, any field, doesn't matter, we could be talking to hairdressers here today, we could be talking to butchers, we could be talking to naturopaths, it wouldn't really matter. Because what you'll find is in any field there's a line of success, and people along that line will be situated depending on where they think they need to be in terms of their belief system. So does it make sense to say that you know, you could have someone down this end, hard-working, reliable, trustworthy person, salt of the earth, working 60 hours a week, going broke? Yep, in a field. And is it? And would it be fair to say that at the other end, you could have somebody who's working 5 hours a week and their main source of activity seems to be counting money? Yeah. And so what would be the difference in those two things, do you think? If they both got the same skill set, they both learned the same tools? Yeah. Yeah, the mindset. And so I've got a bit of an example here. We've got Bob the Builder. And so if you look at the building industry, here's Bob. He's carrying all the tools. He's doing all the work. He's a one-man band, and he's going flat out, and he's struggling to stay struggling to stay in the game, and he's wondering if he should. So and maybe he's thinking, maybe I chose the wrong field. Have you ever had that? I mean, working, you think, maybe it's just the field I'm in. Maybe it's not me. It's just the field. And at the other end of that, we've got Donald Trump. So the main difference between the two, if you haven't figured out, is that Bob's not real. Just got to check, because, you know. And so the thing I like about the two pictures more than the people is that you'll see Bob there is carrying all the tools, and he's struggling. You can see he's busting his bum there. He's got both hands full. Donald's here in a suit. I can guarantee he's never been on a business site, but they're in the building game. Does that make sense? To some capacity there in the building, but Donald's main activity is counting money. And you can see the books in the background. So I really like that, because it indicates that knowledge is the key, okay? Knowledge is the key between Donald and Bob. Bob's out there busting his bum. Donald's looking for the smarter way. He's finding out how you do it. Okay, and then you've got everyone in between. So you can have everyone in between on that line. So you can have somebody who's got about 4 people working for him, 5 people working for him. And we could change fields, couldn't we? We could look at personal training. So that's happening in personal training. You can have somebody who's working for somebody at a gym. So you can work for a Zest, or you can work for someone like that, and you can be doing that. Or I'll use Brad, or you can be Brad at the other end, have 11 trainers working for you. And Brad's main activity is counting money. I've seen him. Okay, so I found this on the internet, and I thought it was quite fascinating to highlight some of the points I want to make. So this is about Donald Trump, and I've highlighted the bits that I feel are relevant to what we're doing here. And so though broke, he moved to Manhattan and charmed his way past his members. Now that's the one key, the first key I want to make, is that he was broke. So is it about having money to make money? Yes or no? Yep. No, because
if you can't, I'll tell you what, if you're waiting to get the money to make it, you're never going to get there. If you're unable to make money while you don't have any, you're in big trouble. And so you've got to be resourceful. So write that down. So you need to be resourceful. I was speaking to David on the break, and I'll get David to share his story a bit later on. And you know, he said he went to where he's working now. I'll let him say where that is. And he was outselling the people in terms of PT, making money and charge out rate, that had been there 5 years, and he had only just been there for a year. And he'd broken every record they have. So it's not about the experience sometimes, it's about your desire. And I asked Dave, why was that, mate? And the reasons he told me was the reason why he was getting an action. He said, well, mate, I had a mortgage to pay, I had kids to look after. So if you've got a big enough goal or target, it will drive you there. The one problem I see in Australia is that we're going to be okay even if we don't really push ourselves, aren't we? If you never owned the Porsche or the big houses, are you going to be okay in Australia? Well, you're never going to starve. And so if you're in a third world country and your main objective today is getting a feed, there's something wrong. So you've got to get in action, don't you? So well, we're waking up in the morning wondering what we're going to wear today. What's most of the population doing in the third world I'm talking about? They're wondering when they're going to get their next feed is. So we're abundantly wealthy. If you're in the dole in Australia, you're in the top 10 money earners in the world. And that's a true fact. If you get a few of your mates together, you can go down the coast, live on a house on the beach, and there you go. And so we've got a good here, which can be the worst thing that can happen to you, because there's nothing wrong with your life right now. And so we've really got to get resourceful. We've really got to get that passion and desire to get what we needed to be. So I won't bother reading the rest of the stuff out, other than the members that he was going into in terms of the business said, just as long as he doesn't steal the older members' wives, they're going to be okay. He had contacts. Important thing, he had contacts. He made the contacts. He wasn't out there just trying to work straight away. He made the effort and spent the time sourcing out the people that he needed to speak to. So if you're in a business and you've got a specific target market, or you know who you want to train, that's gold, because then you know to go, where do I go and find them? Does that make sense? So you actually got to know where these people are that you want to train to give you the end result. He found a niche market, which is my next thing. So he made the rich and famous his niche market. And it goes on to say that he understood their psychology well. And so if you've got a niche market, the smartest thing you can do is find out what these guys are all about. What are their fears? What are their concerns? What are their frustrations? What did we do when we first opened up the session? What did we ask you? There's three things that we asked you, didn't we? Yeah, what do you want to know? We want to understand what you guys want to know. If we know that, we can provide a service. And will you feel looked after if we do that? So we can speak your language. We can find out exactly the psychology of what you want to know. And so one of the best things you can do is find a niche market. Because if you've got a niche market, your focus is here. So the better focus is here. What if you've got a focus that's out there because you're trying to cater for everybody? How easy or hard is it to try to cater for everybody out there? It's hard. How do you speak to everybody? So this workshop was easy because we were targeting personal trainers. But what I mean by that is we had a goal for personal trainers. So we weren't going to try to get hairdressers. Although we could run this same workshop for hairdressers, couldn't we? The principles are the same. Maybe they'd rather Stefan up the front than us, but it'd be the same workshop. And so knowing your niche market is valuable and time-saving, because you can actually go and find those people directly. What that leads to is, while other developers fought to cut corners and lower prices, Trump actually raised his. So if you're standalone and you're in a niche market and you know them well, and no one's doing it better than you are because you put the time and effort into researching these things first, then you can actually raise your prices. We're going to cover that later on too. We cover a lot of that in the internship program that we run. But if you're competing with the guy down the road on price, that's all you got. So when I first opened a gym at Everton Park called Extreme, some of you may know it, myself and the guy who opened it, we had no idea about business. And so someone would come off the street and say, how much is it for a membership? And we'd go, here's the form. And we'd have all our prices on, and they'd walk out the door. Do you reckon we saw those people again? No, so they were price shopping. They wanted to know the price. So they were shopping on price. So we actually weren't doing a very good job helping those people out. What we should have been doing is finding out actually what their needs, concerns, and frustrations were. Had they got the results? What are they actually looking for? Instead, what we did was hand them a price. And how do I tell the difference between you and you in service if it's only a price? Great. I'll use that and borrow that. That's cool.
the what Trish was saying, if you didn't hear at the back, is that she never gives prices over the phone when someone calls up. I ask them, even if you're with someone face to face. My tip, one of my tips is that you never tell them price. If someone asks you a price, you say, "Hey, look, I've got a few different programs and structures that we offer. However, giving a price to you would be unfair at this point because I actually don't know what you want." And so by giving you a price, all you've got is that. So I'm actually not doing my job that great if I just recommend a price to you now. I actually need to find out what your needs and your concerns are and frustrations, what you want to achieve. And what we do is we sit down and we talk about that. And that leads you into your sales process. Yeah, basically you want to get in front of them. If you just tell them a price, it's just like me at the gym giving someone a flyer. We change our system that we always book them in for an appointment. So the first point of contact, someone asks you a price, you just say, "Look, I'm able to give you a price because I don't know what you want." Be unfair. I know my prices. Yeah, it's a pitch, but it's also the way I view it in terms of if you want to get your head around being a salesperson. And I don't like the word sales. I think you're there. You're a consultant for them, and what you actually need to do is get your head around that you actually can't help them if you don't know what they want. And so giving them a price is tricky. So yeah, always say, "We need to find out more about you." And at the end of the day, if they say, "Look, can't you just give me a price?" Then I would, one of the things I'm fond of saying is that, is price the only thing that you're interested in? Is that the only thing you're concerned about? And if they say, yeah, actually it is, I say, "Well, actually, we're not going to be able to work together." And so, because we're all about getting your results. And price, if the only thing that you're after is price, then that's going to get in the way of getting you the results. So I can refer you to somebody else who is quite cheap, and hopefully you'll get the results. Yeah, we call that takeaway selling. So give them something and take it away from them. Yeah, powerful thing to write down. That you got to ask yourself: do I want this person as a client? Not everyone's going to be your client. Yep. It really is a personal choice. Again, so what I do is I actually set it up right from the start. And so I actually make my clients quite aware that, and this is the process that I probably can't explain right now, but something I can do later on. Basically, I just set up from the start. I actually give everybody the rundown of how I operate right from the start. So you tell them what you're going to tell them, and then you tell them, and then you tell them what you told them is the principle. If you're doing a workshop, you tell them what you're going to do, and then you tell them, and then you tell them what you've told them. And so that's the theory with your clients that start. Say, "Hey, this is how I operate. I may pull you up at times if you're not pulling your weight, because I only want to work with people that are really committed and serious. So I may have to talk to you. How do I do that? If you're not performing or you're not doing what we agreed, how do I actually approach you about that and speak to it?" And you just be open and honest with them. And so, because I will call you on it, because I only want to have you here if you're really committed to getting the results. So those things. What? Yeah, cool. The main point. Sorry, what was your name? Tamara May was an important one. That the difference between Tamara and someone starting off in a business is that when you start off, sometimes you're just so keen and eager and you think you need the money that you take people on. And maybe that's what you need to do to find out actually where you want to work and who you want to work with. The difference with Tamara is that she was fully booked and she was tired and she didn't care. And the power is in that. When people understand, when people get the read on you, and you know what I mean by read, they get a sense that you actually don't care, not in a non-compassionate way, but they actually don't care if you come on board or not, then that's powerful. It's, you know, we can call it takeaway selling, all that stuff, but when you actually sit there and you can honestly okaying yourself to go, "You know what, I don't think we're going to be a good fit. I actually don't think I'm going to be able to help you," I can guarantee that's when they're going to want you more. That's when they're going to want you more. And, you know, even if you're trying that for the first time, when I said I'm $200 an hour, my voice broke, the first time you try that and you do it is a powerful shift and change for you, because once you do that, you can never go back to where you were. You can only move forward. And you'll quickly learn that you need to be okay with knowing that there's going to be someone else around the corner. So if I miss out on a client, my favorite saying is, "Okay, well, the better person must be coming around the corner. The client I actually need is not far off." What that does is stop me getting into my fear that I actually need everybody, I need the money. Does that make sense? Because if you're doing it for the money, you might as well go down the valley. You know, and I'm serious. Like, if you're only doing it for the money, then you might as well go and do something else. Because they'll pick up on that anyway. And you'll come across as desperate.
and they'll read that psychology on you. So, okay, we got right off that. That was good. So, one thing I want to mention about the mindset of someone who's successful, and that is with Donald Trump here, he, in the 1990s there was a recession and he actually was $2 billion in debt. Yeah. And so have you ever been concerned about paying off your $20,000 car? Yeah, I have. So it's just a number, isn't it? But we see that number and we go, shit, it's a lot of money. For Donald, it's just a bunch of zeros. And, you know, so if it's $200,000 or $2 million or $2 billion, it changes. And I can remember 10 years ago where I actually thought I was never going to own a house. I thought paying off $130,000 debt was just way out of my reach. Would you love a house for $130 now? Try finding one in Brisbane. And so that actually seems cheap to me now. So I've grown and expanded knowing those things are achievable. And now he's worth $1.6 billion. So if you can make the money, if you learn the systems and you can put it into place, the other thing you've got to be okay with is that you may fall down, you may get it wrong. But it's, are you willing to get back up and go again, is the key. And I'll talk more about fear later on and how it stops us and how to break it down. So let's have a look. So here's just some tips I'll get you to write down. So you need to become resourceful. And this can be your list for whatever you're thinking. Okay, what did Jason say about, you know, getting through to success? What does he say the things that I needed to do or need to look at? And so the more resourceful you can become, the better. You know, we just get caught on, I can't afford it, that's out of my reach. But really, if we stop there, we haven't really used all our resources. Maybe there's another way that we can get the thing without having to pay big amounts of money. Maybe there's a way we haven't thought of yet. But every time we say, I can't afford it, it locks in that program again, that I can't afford it. My favorite saying is, actually at this moment, I don't know actually how I'm going to achieve this goal, but I know there's a way. And what you're actually doing is you're telling your subconscious that you're open to finding a new suggestion. And believe it or not, it'll come to you in some shape or form. But as soon as you say, I can't afford it, that's it. It takes it down as a real experience and it says, well, you can't afford it, so that's it. Well, we won't bother looking for you then. Get inside the head of your clients, even your current clients. Find out who you actually got working for you right now. Ask them. Ask them what was it that made them work with you. So you need to know what actually attracted them to you. You'll be surprised what the answers are. Just ask them. Don't worry about filling out the form. Just ask them while you're training. The easier it is for them, the better, actually. And so by that, you need to find out what were their fears and frustrations? What were some of their concerns about joining? Were they concerned about paying the money they were paying? Because what you do there is that you put that into everyone else you talk to. You can cover those objections straight away with people. It's all about clues and finding out information. So don't compete with the competition. We did cover that. So find a niche, stand alone. If you don't have a niche, it's okay, but it's just, I tell you what, it's a lot easier to develop your marketing, your sales, and your service towards a particular niche. And dig a hole so deep that for someone else to come along and try to compete with you, that they're going to be turned off by it, they're going to be put off and say, it's going to be too much hard work to try to match you with it. Stand alone and provide outstanding service. Well, that's just, you know, under promise, over deliver. So if I know I've got to get some information to one of my clients, I'll always tell them a couple of days more than I probably know I can get it to them. So develop systems for your business. We're going to cover that later on. And have an ABC backup plan to reduce your risk. And I'm going to be talking about that later on as well. And that's more about just exploring some of these fears that you may have about moving forward. Okay, if you're still going, that's cool. I'll have it on the laptop there at the end. So you can write them down if you missed any. Okay, so just draw a line now, and Brad got you to do it, but I actually just wanted you to put where you are on the line now and compared to, are you where Bob is or are you where Donald? And so we're going to use Brad's method of doing this in a minute, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on this. So draw a line, put whereabouts you are, and then where you'd like to be and by when. So we actually need to have a bit of a date in terms of when you want to get there. Won't matter if you don't get there by that date. You can just change it again, can't you? You can reset it. I set a goal to lose the weight in 6 months, but if I didn't achieve it in 6 months, would you suggest I just stop or set another one? Just keep going, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to move through this because we are pushing to get to lunch. Okay, some quick things now. So the reason you'd like to get there is, so these things you can do on your lunch break. So I'll just get you to write down the questions and then you answer them in your own time. Because I want you to have a bit of time to think about it. So the reason you'd like to get there is, the reason you have not been able to do this so far is, the most important thing or activity to action immediately. So there might be a few things you need to do, but what is it that you need to do straight away? And how will you know if it's working? So you need some kind of measure. So we're going to work through some of these things. These are the things we'll do on our blockage buses session.